good afternoon. So, last time, we finished up talking about process-related APIs that POSIX, that the Unix-like operating systems use. You mentioned this idea of exec. So, rather than having a single system call that would make a new program running something in particular, POSIX decided that they'd have this system call that would take the current process and replace it with something else rather than starting a new one. So we have this exec call, which doesn't return, just replaces the current process with something else. So if you want to start a new process running a different program, you have to combine fork to make the new process and exec to replace it with the program that's not the current one that you actually want it to run. Now, when we're running a program, often we want to wait for it to finish, and, well, you know, fork and exec don't do this. When we fork a program, you know, we have our original program and our new one, they get to run in parallel, and the operating system gets to decide, you know, when each of these run, if we have a single core to share. And often what we actually want to do is we want to hold off while this other program is doing something until it finishes. And the mechanism POSIX provides for this is something like wait PID. So this says wait for a particular program to finish. And it also gives you information about how it finished. So like whether it crashed, and if it exited, its exit code, which you can use to like figure out if it thought it was successful or anything else it might want to communicate to you that, you know, it's just a simple number. So after looking at this, we talked just briefly generally about shells. So shells are programs that let a user run program. Most commonly, we think of something like a command line, which is what our assignment that is due in a couple weeks is about. And POSIX specifies a particular command line with some features. It has the basic things that we can run programs, and when we run a program like we type ls, the shell waits for ls to finish before it runs the next program. So it does this fork and exec with wait PID thing. It also has some other features related to input and output that we wanted to start discussing. So we could run a program redirecting its output to a file rather than displaying it on our terminal, and getting its input from a file rather than displaying it on a terminal. And also, we could run a program sending its output as the input to another program. And to talk about how this functionality would work, we need to start talking about how open files work. So in POSIX, files are our generic abstraction for any sort of input and output. So this includes files on disk, sort of what we think of as files in a graphical user interface, something we might click on, and also things like terminals and, you know, I/O devices, so printers, the network, and so on, all are going to be represented as files. And POSIX mechanism is that there's an array in every process of the open files a process have. And our descriptors are indexes into this array. And there's a convention, because we don't typically say, I want to write to file number one. We instead think of, I want to write to standard out, that POSIX assigns 0 as something they'll call standard in, 1 is something they'll call standard out, and 2 is something they'll call standard error. So they just assign these numbers for convenience. And when you do something like printf, you know, that just uses number 1 because that's our convention. So questions about these things we covered last time? So we're gonna look more at file descriptors today. First, a brief logistics note. As I sent an email out, because there was a brief server outage, I've extended the quiz deadline that would normally be due before this lecture until 9:15. If this isn't enough to make up for time you lost on Monday, let me know. But I think given the length of the outage, it should be. And I'd like to try to get the, you know, scores from the quiz back to you reasonably promptly. That's about the quiz. Also, other logistics. If you have assignment questions that, you know, could be answered via Piazza, you might try using it. Note that private questions are allowed. So, like, if you had a problem on Friday and there's no office hours, that might be something to think about, just as a general note, because I know think that's not utilized as much as I expected versus the number of weird XV6 intro problems people had. And it would be something to mention for future assignments if you have trouble making office hours. Okay, so back to file descriptors. So I mentioned an XV6, and I'm going to use XV6 example of how their file descriptors work, because it's very typical of how file descriptors work on a traditional Unix system. So in XV6, in the process control block, we have this struct file star. This represents an open file description, and we have an array of these pointers that are our open files. And index 0 into this array is file descriptor 0, so this would typically be where we're getting our input from. And these are pointers, so they can actually be shared between processes in XV6, and this is also true in typical other Unix-like operating systems. And this means on a fork, it's not a fully deep copy of this list of file descriptors. Typically, just the pointers are copied. Now, something we kind of glossed over a bit is what closed file descriptors are. And when you don't have a file descriptor open, what XV6 does is puts a null pointer in here. So that's what it means if there's no file open with that number. Otherwise, this points to something, and these pointers are copied on open. And we showed this struct that these pointers point to, so it contains information that's needed to find, you know, the actual file or device, which is this type and this pipe and IP structure. And it also contains some bookkeeping information. So we have this offset, so if it's a regular file, where we are in it. And this reference count, which is because we can have the same open file shared between multiple processes. We need to avoid leaking memory or, you know, freeing up a file when it's still in use. XV6 does this by tracking how many processes have a reference to this open file. And also, we have this readable or writable bit. These are charts, but these are basically booleans. They just use a char because that's one byte, and they want to save space. And these represent whether the file was open for reading or writing. It's not actually tracked anywhere else, so it has to be kept here. So this isn't the only way we could represent open files, but it's a viable way that XV6 uses. So one operation we mentioned, that we glossed over last time, is close. So when we run close on an index, it does that files array x equals null is basically what it does, but also it frees the file, you know, frees memory if needed. I'm mentioning this very explicitly because if you don't think of close this way, you might be confused about what happens because we can have the same open file shared between two processes. So if we have a file open in a process that runs and calls fork, then, you know, so let's say we open file number three. If we close file number three here, well, that doesn't just mean that we've set the array entry to null here. Equals. But it still has the same value in the parent if we close in the child, for example. So even though the open files are shared, closing in one doesn't get rid of the others. Closing just gets rid of your reference to the file. And the OS tracks when it can actually free it up based on when everyone has closed that file. So questions about this idea of how close works with this reference counting? Another thing that sometimes trips people up with close is that it returns an int. So I say, what is that? It returns zero on success. This is a very common pattern you'll see in all the POSIX calls. And negative one on error. So you might say, wait, how can close fail? Well, if it's the last open file description for the file, it might need to do some work to clean up the file. For example, it might not actually finish writing it to disk until you call close. In that case, the close could fail. So in practice, because of things like that, it's actually a very good idea to check whether the close fails, and it's often something people miss. And there's a question, so close decrements the ref? Yes, that is the fundamental operation it does, is that it decrements this reference count, and it does the actual work of deallocating resources if that goes down to zero. And another question being asked is, when I showed you this excerpt of the process control block, there's this constant size for this array, which is this no file. Is this a limit on the number of files you can open? Yes. So XV6 says that this constant here, which is defined in some header file, that's the maximum number of open files you can have. If you want more, too bad. You're going to have to change that header file and recompile the entire OS. So other OSs might decide that that's not a valid approach and might have some other way of allocating this array. But XV6 just decided to keep things simple. Other questions? So, we saw this before. So, last time we started looking at this idea of implementing redirection. So with redirection, basically we want to go from having our standard out going to our terminal to going to, say, in this example, output.txt. So we're going to open output.txt. And when we call open, well, open's not going to assign file descriptor number one because that's currently being used for our terminal. So we want to somehow replace our terminal with that. And the way we learn we do that is this dupe2 call. So dupe2 basically just does this pointer assignment, plus it does the work to make sure the reference count is right. But the fundamental operation it does is it assigns one pointer from one entry to another and fixes up all the reference counts so that we don't leak memory ever. So this is our system call, and it's from as the first argument to as the second. If you ever forget the order, you can look up the documentation, which I encourage, because I certainly have needed to do that. So after we open our file descriptor for this redirection, we can pass the file descriptor we opened as the first argument and redirect to one. If we didn't remember what that was, we could use the constant standard out file now, which maybe we should do anyways because it makes our code more readable, to do this assignment to make it so we have standard out going to the newly opened file instead of the terminal where it used to go. So this was our example for that. Now there's some little things we'll talk a little more about later. So I have this fflush here. And the reason I have that is that if we like did a printf here, sometimes printf doesn't output to the actual file right away. And since I'm changing where that would go, I want to make sure everything that was output before goes to the old standard out. So I force it to be output with this fflush before I change where the standard out goes. And my pattern here is I call open, and I pass arguments to open saying I want to write a file, and I want to create it if it doesn't exist, and if it does exist, I want to zero it out, make it start as an empty file. And I also check whether the open fails. For example, maybe we're out of space, maybe we're not in a directory you can add files to, because of permissions. I went to find that out. Then I use this call to do our files of standard out file no equals files of fd for our current process. And I close the file descriptor we just opened. And if you're thinking, well, wait, why doesn't this make it so this printf doesn't work? Because you just closed the file. But the reason why this isn't a problem is that this is, remember, is assigning an entry in that array to null. So we're setting O files of FD to null. I should probably write null. But the copy we've made with dupe 2 of the pointer is still there. So we still have a pointer to the open file of output.txt. So that's still going to work. So the question is, does printf always look for O files of standard out? So printf, like, typically is implemented without actually knowing about this open files array, but it's going to be making a write system call, which we'll talk a little about later, that passes in standard out file now. So that's the question. Does printf always look for O file standard out? So printf knows that it uses standard out, so it's going to use the standard out file now when it makes its actual system call. And someone says this seems very roundabout. It's a matter of debate. So if we only cared about changing what printf does, it does seem roundabout, but note that this is going to also change it for like new programs we spawn. And so in some senses, it's simpler, as we'll discuss, because basically printf is built on top of a simpler output layer, which is sort of why this design came about. So sort of our summary of the operations is that open assigns a new entry to this array, dupe2 does an assignment of one entry to another, and close sets something to null, and fork basically copies the pointers. It doesn't do a deeper copy than that. And not shown here is that there's a bunch of work to actually count the references and make sure that, you know, this actually does what we expect as far as like making sure we don't have dangling pointers and we don't leak memory. So questions about open, dupe2, close, fork? So question is, what if you don't call close? So in this example, there's not going to be really any harm in doing it. Because, well, eventually our process will exit and it will get closed anyway. When our process terminates, all of its file descriptors are effectively closed. Now, where we might get in trouble is, let's say we keep opening files. Well, eventually we're going to run out of entries in that array, and we're going to keep using more and more space as we do that. And so that's sort of the main reason why I have this closed in my example, and I would like you to be in the habit of closing when you're doing things like this, because otherwise you'll eventually run out of file descriptor numbers, or you'll be wasting lots of memory for all these open files. And we don't want to do that, you know, especially if you think of, like, if you're like writing a server that like runs for hours. Well, you know, this might not be a big deal over a couple seconds, but, you know, if your server runs for a couple hours, you might eventually be using a lot of space. So, your question is, how will O files of standard out be restored to standard out in the end? In this example, it will not. That we have lost the ability after we do this to get the original standard out. If we wanted that, we would need to do something where we like did a... So one way we could do it is we could like dupe to standard out file no to some other number. So we could restore it later, you know. But, you know, that's not done in this example. So after we do this dupe to operation, we just don't have the information to actually restore the original standard out. Other questions? I guess I should mention, for the question of how do I restore it, in the shell example, so if we're thinking of redirection, which maybe is what you were thinking of, the reason why this would not be, why that not being restorable wouldn't be a problem, is that typically we do this dupe to operation after forking, so it would only affect the child process. The parent process would still have the same original standard out. Then the question, is there a global standard out file descriptor? All file descriptors are per process. So they're global in the sense of like a global variable is global, in that it's the same for the entire process, but they're not global in the sense that they're shared between programs. Other questions, follow up? So a question, I don't see standard out file no in the XV6 repo. Should I use standard out and standard io.h instead? So XV6, to keep things simpler, just doesn't define those constants. So if you see XV6 code, they just write one instead of standard out file no. For the second part, should I use standard out and standard io.h instead? The answer is very much no. Mainly not for this reason, but because XV6 doesn't have the C standard library. It has a library, but it's much more limited than the normal C library. And one thing that probably came up when you were doing the XV6 intro assignment is that, for example, XV6 is printf. You know, it took like a one and something. You know, it didn't take a file star like the normal printf that's in the standard library, because the XV6 doesn't use the standard library. And because it doesn't use the standard library, if you try to include standard io.h, which is part of the C standard library, it just won't work. In XV6, I should say. Now, for the shell assignment, we're having you run it on Linux, not XV6, so you don't have to worry about that stuff. Is that... answer that question or other questions? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, talked about opening, you know, and closing file descriptors, moving them around, how a fork affects them. Something probably should actually talk about is how read and write works, because that's kind of the most useful operation on a file descriptor, you might say. So these are our two read and write calls. SSizeT is a signed number big enough to hold the size of values. Enough to hold size of anything in memory. So that's what they return, is a signed integer. And they take a file descriptor, a buffer, which is taken as a void star, but it's just interpreted as bytes. So typically you'll pass a char star as the second argument, and a count, which is the number of bytes in the buffer. So the read fills in this buffer, the write reads from this buffer and copies it to the file descriptor. And these return the number of bytes read or written. And you might say, wait a moment, does that mean that it might not be equal to count? And the answer is yes. We'll talk about that in a bit. And if there's an error, they return -1, which is why we have a sign type here as the return value, even though we don't have that for the count. And Erno has the code. We'll show an example of how we might print out the error. So read, as a special case, can return 0, which is distinct from returning -1. So -1 means an error. 0 from a read is not an error. It means end of file. So that's, we just got to the end of file. Everything's normal, but we got to the end of file. That's, we return 0 for that. If you actually had an error reading, it would return -1, like if you had your disk is broken. There's a question, what is a void pointer? So a void pointer is the C type for pointer to anything. So it just stands in for a pointer to anything. As a special rule in C and not C++, if you use any type of pointer as if it were a void pointer, it will convert without a cast. So the question, shouldn't broken I/O device, which I have written here, be -1? So let's say, what I'm trying to refer to here is, let's say I'm reading from a file and the OS manages to read this much and then the disk seems broken. What the OS might do is it might give you back this stuff. So you'll, even if you ask to read, say, this much, it might give you this much back. And then when you read again, you'll get a -1 as an error. Does that answer that question? Maybe we should draw this. So this would be our first read, and our second read would be -1. Error. This device crashed. Okay. So let's get an example of read. So here's an example of reading, in this case, one byte at a time. So I have a character I read into. So I pass a pointer to the character. And I say it's one byte long, because that's the size of a character, and I'm reading from standard in, and I get the amount read, and while it's greater than 0, so while I'm not at end of file and don't have an error, I append it to the string using the candy C++ plus equals operator for doing that. And then I check whether the amount read is -1. If it is, there's an error. And POSIX provides this function called perror, which is basically equivalent to fprintf. In this case, perror read is going to be fprintf read colon S and the error message for the last thing that broke. And otherwise, if it's zero, I reach into file, and that's the normal case. So there's a question, what's the string type? This is C++ code here. Also a question, how do void pointers behave in C++? In C++, you'll sometimes need a cast to convert between pointers and void pointer, normal pointers and void pointers, or vice versa. In C, you never need a cast to go in either direction, which is confusing. And also, will write do anything if you write more bytes than count? So for both read and write, count is the maximum number you want to write or read. And when things work perfectly, that's generally the amount you'll read or write from the buffer. And you better have enough space for that. And there's a question, did I just jump to C++ from the previous? So because 2150 is taught using C++, I assume you're kind of familiar with C++, and explaining how to concatenate strings in C++ is a lot easier than explaining how that works in C, which is why I use that for this example. Does that answer that confusion about, like, why is this C++? So the question, I'm using something without an XV6 implementation. So I am showing you things here in POSIX. A lot of these things will not work on XV6 as is, because XV6 is a very limited standard library. I'm sort of focusing on what real Unix does without needing to worry too much about XV6's limitations. As far as things like string manipulation, I don't want to, spend a lot of time talking about how you write string libraries, so I'm just going to use the most convenient string library I think you're likely to know, which is why I'm using the C++ string library. And for the shell assignment, as I mentioned earlier, it's not on XV6, largely because it would be really annoying to not give you access to the C and C++ standard library string routines. There's a question of, why am I using PError to print out a message instead of printf? The main advantage is that PError, this is prints to standard error, one thing that printf won't do by default, but most notably, it includes an error message. So for example, what might happen is I might get something like read resource temporarily unavailable or something like that printed out. So I'll get some kind of reason for the error, which might be useful with PError, which I could also do with printf or fprintf, but I need to call a function to retrieve that message. And the function you can look up is string error. That would retrieve the message. Other questions, follow-ups? Okay, so this is our simple read. I'm reading one character at a time. And if we actually wanted to read a command line, well, this would work, but it's kind of slow. We'd like to do more at a time. So what would that look like? So here's some code that reads 1,024 bytes. So the way it works is I have my buffer to read into. Right, and I was careful about the cast here. I probably need a cast because this is C++ here. And I'm reading into this buffer at a particular offset, and the offset starts at 0, and I'm reading the amount I want to read minus the offset, so the rest of the buffer. And I see if there's an error, otherwise I increment my offset by the amount read. So when things work really well, probably what will happen here is amount read will be 1024 the first time, and this loop will happen one time. Otherwise, this keeps looping until there's either an end of file. Or we fill in our 1024 bytes. This is an example of how you might deal with not reading as much as you like. And, you know, this is relatively straightforward code, but this probably explains why, you know, if I'm telling you how to read or write in C or C++, I'm probably going to tell you like to use fgets or, you know, cin, which have figured this logic out and written it for you so you don't have to do it by hand. So there's a question, should this be an or instead of an and? So this first condition, so if we haven't filled in the entire buffer and we haven't reached end of file is what the condition is. So it should be, so I believe and is correct. The idea is if we want to stop. So another way we could have written this is, well, it's not true that the offset is equal to the amount read to read, or the amount read is 0. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So this is the sort of thing you need to do for partial reads. Now, something that, you know, makes these a little confusing is that on regular files, like files on disk, read, you know, is going to give you what you request, except if something's really wrong. But partial reads actually happen a lot because we often aren't dealing with regular files. So, for example, when you call read and you're reading from the network or the keyboard, typically the way read is implemented is that it's going to give you what's available at the time. And that makes sense. Because that's what might be useful. So like if you're reading from the network, it will give you what's been received so far, even though that might not be everything you're expecting to eventually read. Or if you're reading from the keyboard, it will give you what's typed so far, even if that's not everything you eventually want to read. So if you want to read until a certain number of bytes or until like a new line, you're going to need to call read in a loop, which is why we have this while loop here. Here we're trying to read a certain number of bytes. And when we're reading from something like the keyboard or the network, we might get like the first couple key presses as they come in, rather than all of the, in this case, 1024 bytes all at once. Questions about this? So writes, so I showed you a write example when we talked about XV6 system calls. You have your file descriptor, your thing to write, and your amount number of bytes to write. Now writes are also susceptible to this, you could get write less than you request problem, but this is a lot less of an issue because usually this only happens on an error or interruption, though maybe that wouldn't be true with certain types of devices. So here is code to deal with what if this write doesn't write everything requests for some reason, and I have a similar loop to what I had with the read, where I just track the number of remaining bytes and I move my pointer around to account for that. Now, writes, as I said, you only usually only get these partial writes on error or interruption. And the big reason for that is POSIX made a choice that while reads will give you what's available right now, writes don't work that way. Writes will generally wait until the write completes. You can turn that off, but that's not the default. The default is that the write waits until it completes or some sort of error happens. Just because that's typically the most useful. If you don't want that, if you want it to only write what it can write right away, you have to request that. Okay, so let's do this exercise here. Give another 20 seconds or so. Okay, so we have our most popular answer is what I believe is the correct answer. Let's go over sort of what's going on just generally. So initially we have standard out, open, and let's say our FD here is say 3. So standard out going to the terminal, and we get 3 going to output.txt. And then we write to 3. So our output.txt here, this goes to output.txt. Then we do this dupe to, which remember the order is from 2. So this assigns 100 to what standard out was. So 100 points to the terminal. And then we have another from 2. This assigns, in this I'm saying hypothetically 3 to point to, standard out to point to where 3 points to. So this makes the terminal become sort of standard out become output.text. So after we've done this, we do this write to standard out. I look up where that goes. It goes to output.text. FD still goes to output.text. Then we have this close, and this close of 3, remember close is setting the entry in the array to null, so this is now closed, but standard out is not closed. So now when we do this write, standard out still goes to output.txt. I didn't do anything that changed that. I changed where 3 goes, but not standard out. And this 100 goes to the terminal. And if we look at the things that go to output to text, we have this A, B, C, and D. And that's how we get our outputs. Can I clarify what the argument order for dupe to is? So yes, it is dupe to, the from, to. So this does the equivalent of O files of to gets O files of from. So this, for example, sets FD100 to do something. Follow-ups, other questions? Okay. So our question is the first line, I assume you mean the first dupe to redirects standard out file node to the terminal. That is not what it does. The first dupe to sets file descriptor 100, which was just chosen arbitrarily to be a copy of standard out. And if standard out was originally the terminal, that would be the terminal. Other questions? Follow-ups? Okay. So we've looked at how read and write work for files in general, and we're going to look at a particular kind of file that's going to be especially useful for implementing a shell feature known as pipelines. Like that foo's output goes to the program bar that we've seen. And this is a file called pipes. And the way pipes works is they're a file where you put bytes in one end. We'll talk about what I mean by end, but they have two ends, and it comes out the other. And we can create these with this library call for pipe. And the intended use here is to communicate between processes. So this is actually, besides regular files on disk, this is the first inter-process communication mechanism we've seen. So the general way it works is that we make an array of two ints for our file descriptors, and we call pipe, and we get two file descriptors. And the first one is the read end of the pipe. The second one is the write end of the pipe. And if we write to the write end, we can read from the write. Write to the write end, we can read from the read end the things we write. And most commonly, we'll see this done in two separate processes. So this will be followed by like a call to fork, and in the child we might write, and the parent we might read. Though there's not actually a restriction on that, that's just the typical pattern you're going to see. So questions about this basic idea of what pipes look like? Now, there's a big reason, why I'm, saying our typical uses of multiple processes, and that's that if we try to do this in one process, sometimes things aren't the way we like. So this example here, if you ran this code, and an important part of this is that where some big size is a big number, and our buffer is actually that big, typically this will just hang. So any ideas about why would it hang? Like, what's going on? So one question is, where is it hanging? Is it hanging on this write or this read or something else? And this goes to something subtle I mentioned earlier about how read and write work. And also something about how pipe has to be implemented. So we go back to when I mentioned how write usually works, is that write by default waits until a write completes. So it's going to actually hang on the write. The write's going to be waiting until it completes, and it's going to hang, so it's never going to complete. And the reason why is that the operating system needs to put the data you're writing somewhere. And the choice that almost all Unix-like systems have made is that when you have a pipe, they have a buffer of some size they're going to allocate. And if it's bigger than that, they're just going to have the write wait until something reads from it. In this case, that's never going to happen. So this write will fill up this buffer, but there's more data to put in it. So the write's going to wait until the buffer gets drained by something reading from it, but that never happens because we never reach this read call, because we're still in the write call. So questions about the scenario? Can I clarify what the buffer is? So this is, to implement pipe, the OS needs to stores written data that's yet to be read. So that's a buffer that the OS keeps. And generally, the OS will have a limit on the size of a buffer it's willing to keep. It will keep some amount around to make this work reasonably well, but it's not going to keep an infinite amount. So there's a question, can another process read from the buffer? In general, yes, but in this example, no, because there's no way for another process to get a file descriptor that's going to refer to the same pipe. Another question is, would this also happen when writing a file? And the answer is no, because when we're writing, assuming we mean a regular file, if you mean a file on disk, then the OS doesn't put the file in a temporary buffer, it puts it on disk, and either it can store it on disk, or the write's going to fail and say, hey, I ran out of disk space. But with pipes, the OS thinks it's storing things temporarily, so what they've chosen to do is, you know, have the write wait until there's some space freed up by someone reading it, because that's what they expect to happen. In this case, you know, that doesn't. And there's a question, if this size was smaller, would this work? So, yes. So there's a size that actually POSIX, the standard, requires to this to work for, which I believe is the constant pipe buff, which is sort of a lower bound on the size of this buffer, but typically that's only a few kilobytes. Other questions?
Is some buffer something you declare, or is it something from the kernel?
The question is in this question, this argument here, some buffer, is that something we declare? It has to be yes. And that's distinct from this OS data structure. I'm sorry that I've use the same name for both of them. Okay. This is OS, you know, pipe implementation's name. So a more useful use of pipe is when we have multiple processes. So here I make a pipe, I get the read and write ends, and I fork, so I have a child and parent process that both have references to this pipe. So I call pipe, let's say I get a read and write end, and I call fork. And in the child process, I close the read end and I write to the write end. And in the parent process, I close the write end and read from the read end. And after that, we have them wait for each other. So this is a more typical, you know, useful use of pipe you can see here. And there's a question, can the read and write roles be swapped? Absolutely. So questions on how this example works? So in this case, we write from the child and read in the parent. We could have done that in different processes. The key idea is that once we have these file descriptors, even after forking, they still refer to the same pipe. So we can write to the write end from any process that still has a copy of that file descriptor and read from any process which still has a copy of the read end file descriptor. So the question is, what does pipe do exactly? So it creates, it allocates two file descriptors, which it stores in its argument, and they are connected to each other. So writing to one reads from the other, and that's arranged in the OS. Does that answer that question? Other questions about this? So the question is, pipe a file or process? So when I refer to a pipe, I mean that's a file that these two file descriptors refer to. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So I showed this example with two processes in our shell assignment. You know, we're going to use this to implement pipelines. So here, for example, if you run this command on a Unix command line, this will run the ls-1 command and send its output through the grep command for foo. Grep will print out the lines that contain foo. ls-1 will print out all the files in the current directory. And this connects the output of ls with the input of pipe of grep using a pipe. So we create a pipe. So this gets a pair of file descriptors. We make in a child to run ls. In that process, we make standard out go to the pipe. And then we close the file descriptors for the pipe so we don't waste memory and run ls. And then we make another child process for grep and do something similar, but instead of attaching the write end of the pipe to standard out, we attach the read end of the pipe to standard in. And because ls's standard out goes to the pipe and grep's standard in goes to the pipe, they're connected to each other. When ls writes, grep will read. And you can see in my example code here, after I'm done connecting ls and grep to each other, the parent process has no reason to use the pipe anymore, so it closes its file descriptors to them, and then you can do the usual work of waiting for these to finish. So there's a question, is this code analogous to the terminal input or generated to carry the terminal input? This is, I'm not sure what question you're asking. If I wanted to write a program that did exactly what this command would do, this is the program I'd write. Does that answer the question? The question, is the convention that 0 is for the read end and 1 is for the write end? Yes, that is how the pipe works. I strongly encourage you to look that up when you need it, because certainly I have forgotten it. So as an example of how this might work, in our parent process, we call pipe. You get two file descriptors. Then the parent forks twice. Each of those forked processes has a copy of all the file descriptors at the time of the fork. And in one shot, the first child, we set the write end to standard out and then close three and four because we've made a copy of the one we care about and run ls. We set the read end to standard in the grep child and close, you know, the three and four because we've made a copy of the one we care about and run grep. And we close three and four in the parent because we're done with them in the parent. We already have copies of them in the child. And that would be how this works. Questions about this example? The question is, what is the advantage of forking here? Well, if we're thinking about running this in the shell, what we want to do after this is wait for the processes and prompt for the next command. If we didn't fork twice here, we wouldn't be able to do that because we wouldn't still be running because exec remember replaces the current process. So that's why I forked twice. So I can have some code after here, which would, after ls and grep finish, would prompt for the next command. Does that answer that question? Okay. So let's do a little other exercise. So here, an example. So here's an example that uses pipe, and basically I'm trying to have the child write to the parent what the letter A, and I'm writing out how many bytes I read. And my question is, you know, why would I get read 0 bytes? And this is what I get from writing this code consistently. Why would that happen? And there's a question in my prior examples why argv was hard-coded, just to make it simpler to show what was going on. And I say on the slide, this is a subtle bug. This is a subtle bug, and I am showing it to you because it is something that really happens on the shell assignment that, if you don't know about it, can be pretty annoying to debug. Give another 20 seconds. Okay, so a plurality of you have figured out the problem. And the problem is that this call to pipe is made after the fork. So we have our parent process running, we call fork, And we have two calls to pipe, each of which makes its own pipe. And that means that there's no relationship between the pipe in the parent process or the child process. Anything that the child writes is never going to get to the parent. And that's the biggest problem here. So, everything else doesn't matter. Now, all of the other things I mentioned as options aren't actually problems, and I should talk about why. So, the first one I think is the most confusing, and has to do with something I kind of glossed over with read. So, I mentioned that read gives you what's available, but the rule is read does waits for something to be available, then gives you what's available. So, you know, so read only returns zero on actual end of file. So if it's not the end of the file, read is going to wait rather than returning zero. You can still read less than you request, but you only get zero on end of file. That's otherwise it'd be very hard to figure out the difference between, you know, someone closed the network connection versus I just don't have anything yet. And there's a question. Does it matter that neither the parent or child closed the second half of the pipe? So in each case, and it's important for, we'll talk about the parent first. The parent, this is, closes the right end of the pipe. So this is the parent's pipe here. And what that means is that when we call read, the OS knows, oh, there's nothing we can read. And that's why it returns zero. It knows there's nothing we can read because all the right ends of the pipes are closed. And so that's why it returns zero rather than hanging. So if we didn't do this close here, it would hang instead because the OS would be waiting for something to be written to the pipe and it would say, well, it's open somewhere, so maybe something will be written. That's the rule they have. So follow-up questions. This question... So the fix here is that we should call pipe before fork. Yes, if you want to have a shared pipe after you fork, you better call pipe before the fork. It won't be shared otherwise. So if we didn't, the question is, just to clarify, read will hang until something is written to pipe FD0. So read... here, this read here is going to try to wait for something to be written to the pipe. But since all the right ends of the pipe are closed, in this example, it just returns immediately. There's nothing to read. But if this wasn't closed, so if I had this X'd out, then the read would hang. Because it would be waiting for something to be written, and the OS would think, well, something could be written. Question is, how does the OS know that PipeFD1 is still available to another program? Basically, to make that determination, read is going to check this reference count, or the OS's equivalent of that, if it's not, because this works and not XV6. Does that answer that question? Okay. Other questions? Yes. Example. So here's another example. So let's do this exercise. So here I've called pipe at the right time. So we have two processes that are actually going to share the pipe. And in the child, we close the read end of the pipe and write 0, 1, 2, 3, all the way up to 9. And then exit. And the parent is going to read from the pipe. From the read end of the pipe after closing the write end. And I'm telling you in the question that C is not the only possible answer, which is C and B are not the only possible answers. Give another 25 seconds or so. Okay, so, the majority answer is F. So let's talk about our possibilities. So, I guess I need to, the rule here is that this read here is going to wait until there's some input, or we know there's never going to be more input. Input no one can write. So that's the how this read is going to work. So when this read runs, the US is going to say, we're just going to either wait for there to be some input on the pipe, or it's going to wait until, alternatively, it figures out no one can write to the pipe. And this read can happen at various times. So let's say the read happens here, before the child writes. In that case, we're going to wait until we can have some input, and we're going to get 0. So B is possible. Let's say it happens like here. I should do this in a different color. Here, apparently, interesting. It happens here. In that case, we're going to get some sort of partial input. We're asking for 10 bytes. We're going to get what's available. Another option is that the read might happen way down here. In which case, well, we'll have everything available and we'll get all of these. So we can have A and B are both possible, but C is not, because of this rule that it waits for some input or we know no one can write anymore. And the only case where no one's going to be able to write anymore is after all the write ends are closed. So it's true that here, our current process can't write, but someone can write to the pipe. And what the OS is going to check is going to check, does anyone have a file descriptor that can write to this pipe open using that sort of reference counting idea? So the best answer, I believe, is D. And yes, there's some other possibilities I didn't write, like 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on. And the question, there's a question, can we guarantee that A will be the only output if we wait for the child process to terminate? Assuming you mean we wait for it here. The answer would be yes, but there's an issue with this more generally, which is that if the child was writing like many kilobytes, the child might hang waiting for someone to read from the pipe, like our earlier example. Does that answer that question? Question is, so 012 is not a possible output? So is 012 not a possible output? 012 is absolutely possible. I just didn't ask about it. I just said which of these in the question. So there's a question, if you wrote all 10 bytes at a time, would the output always be 0 through 9? I think the answer in POSIX is yes, but don't expect this to hold true if we have bigger numbers, because if we're writing many kilobytes, the US might have to split it up into smaller operations internally. Does that answer that question? So a question is, if read returns 0 on success, wouldn't count equals 0? So read returns the number of bytes read. On success. If it reads nothing, it returns 0. If it reads nothing successfully, that is, it returns 0. But it will return a positive number if it read more than one byte successfully. And the reason we call returning 0 end of file is because that's what successfully reading nothing means, you reach the end of the file. Does that answer that question? So the question is, are file descriptors not duplicated when fork is called? They are. So this pipe creates a file descriptor R and W. Let's say it's 3 and 4. And we copy those file descriptor arrays. So, you know, after this fork, 3 points to the read end of the pipe, let's say, and 4 points to the write end. And the same is true in the child. So after this fork, they have copies of the same file descriptors. And they only diverge from each other because, for example, one of them closes in their copy, but not, you know, the other copy. I hope that answers how file descriptors are duplicated. I guess the other part of it is that, you know, the file descriptors are duplicated, but they point to the same place. Because remember, file descriptors act like pointers. So after this fork, file descriptors, let's say hypothetically 3, points to the read end, which is this points to the same place that the other file descriptor 3 points to. Other questions? Okay. Oh, and I'm way over time. I am sorry. As for what's possible, if you actually run this, this is kind of what you get. And since I'm way over time, sorry about that. I don't mean to do that. I'm going to definitely leave off here. These are frequencies, yeah. So when I ran this code here a thousand times, and this is the frequency distribution I got. So this is where I'll off.